and community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
I'm Megan.
Together we are Lark and Poe.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 in Kingston, Ontario.
Living in a charming older house near Queen's Campus? Critics, but here's something to consider. Lead in your drinking water. Utilities Kingston ensures water is lead-free when it leaves treatment plants. But older pipes, especially before 1950, can leach lead. Want a peace of mind? Volunteer to get you water tested for free. Call us at 613-546-1181 or visit our website at utilitieskingston.com/water/lead testing.
Word Labs Out Loud, your weekly writing spark on CFRC 101.9. Join your host, Arrow McCauley, for a free-flow show where words, ideas, and music mingle. Each week, we sit down with one of the local authors and artists leading writing workshops through the Word Labs program. They'll share their stories, their insights, and maybe even a few secrets of their craft. Get your pens ready. After the chat, you'll get writing prompts to stretch your imagination, all set to a soundscape designed to help you focus, relax, and create.
Hi, I'm Brian from the Lemon Twigs. This is Michael from the Lemon Twigs.
Hi, I'm Michael from the Lemon Twigs, and this is CFRC Radio.
Hi, this is David Wilcox. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM Kingston.
This is Lauren from Churches, and I am saying hello to Queen's University CFRC.
The mood.
With me.
I'm radio.
CFRC.
The best radio station we've ever heard.
Children, go!
And good morning. It is the 10 o'clock hour here in Kingston, Ontario. You are tuned into CFRC 101.9 FM, CFRC.ca. For those of you listening in through the web, we are located in the lower level of Carruthers Hall on the beautiful Queen's campus. My name is May, and you are now listening to The Mood with May. So today is a bit of a fun and funky and fresh episode. First of all, Happy New Year. It's officially the first show of The Mood with May for 2026. And in celebration, question mark, of that, in celebration that I've made it on the air this long, that they've let me continue on, I'm doing an all analog show. So every single piece of music you hear today will be played either by vinyl, CD, or cassette. This is all things that I brought from home, mostly because I didn't have time to come to the station in advance of my show to browse through our tremendous library. So even if I wanted to use our library, I simply did not have the time. And that seems to be an issue, a common thread that comes up in my life, is that I just simply don't have enough time. Now, as I get into things, and the reason that the heart of why I am doing today's show as analog, or as I put it, I think on my Instagram story, the art of analog, is a lot to do with approaching the things I love with intentionality in 2026. That's one of my biggest obstacles I face with how little time I have, with how packed I make my schedule, not only as a student, but as an individual, trying to meet all of my social expectations that I have for myself, and then also make sure I'm meeting social expectations that others have of me. That being said, as much as I love music and I love reading and I love watching films and TV shows, that kind of all gets caught in the background noise of my life a lot of the time. You know, I'm rewatching The X-Files right now, but a lot of times I'll put it on in the background while I'm cooking dinner, while I'm doing something else. It becomes like an accompaniment rather than an experience in and of itself. So today's show is talking about approaching music with intentionality specifically, but also approaching albums with intentionality. Before albums even get into our hands, they go through a long strain of, you know, the artist makes it and the producer like does their own spin on it. And so many hands touch that album before we even conceive of it. And I think that's such an incredible process. And in 2026, I really want to take a step back and try and recognize that process, but also give myself the room to experience the album as an entity and as an art form and as a whole being. So today's episode, even though I'm doing individual songs, they're off of albums that I listen to and I own and I love. And these are albums that I have approached in that sense. And that's part of the reason why I love them so much. I don't know. There's a lot of reasons that we'll get into, a lot of semantics later on in the show, talking about why that's become so commonplace and why music has become commodified. But right now, you know, music is an art form and it does need to be appreciated, and there is a time and a place to do all the other things. And, you know, it's fine to put music on in the background. I do it. Everyone does it. But I think you also should set aside time. If music isn't your thing, then setting aside time to really dig into a show or to a movie or something that you really care about and approach that with intentionality. And I think part of that is like I've gotten to a point with my phone where my attention span is not what it used to be. I used to rip through books as a kid, and now I sit down and I start reading a book and then I'm like, oh, wait, I need to do this thing. And I have this thing that I have to do, and oh, I could be doing this. So it's really just making sure that, you know, I can sit down, listen to an album, read a book, watch a movie, and not have those kind of pop-up notifications in my mind saying, you have all of these other things. So giving it the space, and then also you can get into a whole other argument about album art and looking at, you know, there's so many variations that are released of albums now, whether it's a variation in pressing, whether it's a special edition that comes with bonus tracks, whether it's an alternate album cover. I think we've really lost the nuance of this is a finished piece of art and this is what is representing me and this is what is representing the concept or the time of my life that this album represents, and I'm putting it forth to you. And there's both positive and negative connotations with that, and I'm not going to get into all of it because I simply don't have the time, but I am going to start things off with our very first track. Now, if you saw anything that I posted on social media about this, I did mention and I did feature an album by the lovely Nina Simone. Now, this album is the Live at the Village Gate, which was a music venue in Greenwich Village in the 60s, in the sort of folk scene of the time. This was recorded in March of 1961. It was released in 1962. I don't have an original pressing. I'm not rich. But I've been looking for this specific compilation of songs for such an incredibly long time, like at least 3 years. And this summer, I went to visit my friend in Merrickville, of all places, a teensy tiny little town in the Ottawa Valley. And I popped into the record shop just to see what they had. And, you know, I just had a feeling. I went to the counter and I was like, do you happen to have Nina Simone Live at the Village Gate? And by chance, they were like, oh, we just got it in and we only got one copy. And it wasn't in the jazz or the blues or the soul sections because it's in our new bin. And so I was like, I don't care how much it is, I'm buying it right now. Thank you so much. And then I brought it home and I've listened to it probably a million times on repeat. And I think there's a magic of listening to something, not only in its whole form, but on its intended form. Listening to an album from the 60s on vinyl is really like the closest you can get to experiencing that in its original form. Do I wish... Oh my God, I need to drink some water. Do I wish that I could have been at the Village Gate for this performance? Yes. Was I alive that long ago? Not even close. That being said, I hope you enjoy the very first song today is Children, Go Where I Send You by Nina Simone, the High Priestess of Soul, right here on The Mood with May. This is CFRC 101.9 FM.
Shall I send you? I'm gonna send you one by one. One for the little bitty baby who was born Bethlehem. Take your time, boy. We got a while to go now. Children, go where I send you. How shall I send you? I'm gonna send you two by two, two by Paul and Silas. One for the little bitty baby who was born. Bethlehem. You ever been to revival meeting?
Yeah,
I bet you don't even know what I'm talking about. Well, you in one right now. I'm gonna sing you four by four, for the four that stood at the door, for the Hebrew children, for Paul and Silas, one for the little bitty baby who was born in Bethlehem. Children, go where I send you, how shall I send you? I'm gonna send you ten.
All the sisters of mercy, they are not departed or gone. They were waiting for me when I thought that I just can't go on. And they brought me their comfort, and later they brought me this song. So long.
with you, you'll catch me through it too. I did a clueless two. We're always meant to be us two, traveling through time.
And welcome back. You just finished listening to New Bliss by Afternoon Bike Ride. Before that, we had Leonard Cohen with Sisters of Mercy. And at the very top of that set, the lovely Nina Simone with Children Go Where I Send You. Welcome back. This is the all analog version of The Mood with May. We were talking a little bit before the break about, you know, making sure that you're approaching things with intentionality, but then also on the production end and I guess marketing and distribution end, that there's a bit of nuance with, you know, how the artists and how the labels and the distribution companies are approaching albums. I'd like to transition a little bit into how we consume media in the digital age. And if I take a pause for a second, it's because I'm trying to mess around with the CD player because it's saying that there's no disc. And there is a disc. So hopefully that works before we have to get to the next break. But that being said, media consumption in the digital age definitely prioritizes speed and convenience versus having an understanding of the art itself or the context in which the art exists. That being said, that can mean a lot of things. It can mean, you know, the context of where you're at when you listen to that album, how it makes you feel, but also the creative process that went into making that album, but also the context in terms of time period, what was going on when that album was created is important. And I think those are things that often get overlooked when we kind of just consume and consume and consume, and we don't really take the time to read the liner notes, read the lyrics, understand, you know, why did they include vocal layering at this one part? Why did they do the production like that? And you don't have to have every single answer, but I think it's important to be curious about those things and to invest time in understanding why the music you love is something that you love and why it exists and how it exists. And I think to disregard all of that process and all of that context is to do the work of art a disservice. And I think that has a lot to do with our attention spans being trained for instant gratification through social media, through basically everything in our life. If we want something, we can get it immediately. For example, last night I was up late writing an essay and it was midnight and I had nothing in my fridge because I'm leaving tomorrow. And I was like, wow, I would really love some chicken wings. 10 minutes later, I had Wingstop. Like, we don't have barriers like we used to. And that's a good thing in terms of accessibility and making sure that, you know, in terms of art and music, you can reach a large audience. But it's also a bad thing in the sense that there's overconsumption and there's a lack of anticipation. There's a lack of patience or appreciation for art. You know, before we got streaming, before we had piracy and digital files, before any of that started to exist, you know, you had to either wait and listen for your song on the radio. If you wanted to create a mixtape, you had to wait for the song to come on and try and catch it right as the song started. There was like an anticipation of going to a record store and digging through the stacks and trying to find the album you wanted to listen to, because that was the only way, save for, you know, going to a library and borrowing it, or borrowing it from a friend, or going to a friend's house to listen to it. And in a way, it's great that we have more accessibility and we can listen to a broad variety of music. And I think that's also important from a cultural lens, to be able to consume things that aren't in your general immediate vicinity. But I think we've kind of gone a couple steps too far, where now we have everything at our fingertips and we want to just take and take and take and take and not understand where it's coming from and why it's coming from that place. And you see this a lot, and there's a lot of nuance that I can't get into in this time period, and that's also not maybe directly relevant to the conversation we're having right now. Conversation as though this is a two-way thing, a two-way exchange, but I digress. I think that you lose a lot of that exchange when you're just grabbing and grabbing and grabbing. For example, we see a lot of politically based subcultures becoming a commodity, and it's becoming an aesthetic. We look at goth and punk subcultures, which were founded in a sense of political rebellion or subversion of, you know, what was deemed normal at the time. And now you have people making what they deem goth music online, but then they're spewing a bunch of things that would be inherently opposite to what that ideology is. And so you lose a lot of the understanding of where that music is coming from and why it was created. And in terms of like subcultures like goth and punk, that evolves. Obviously, we're not in the exact same place that we were, say, 40 years ago. And there's different ideologies and different things that we can stand for and stand against. But even looking from a cultural lens, a lot of colonization happens through this because the people who are creating the music kind of get lost in the shuffle. And so you're starting to consume music and you're like, yeah, I really like this music. I know nothing about the artist. I know nothing about what they represent. I know nothing about why they created this. And when you look at songs that come out of, you know, political resistance or any type of revolution, rebellion type behavior, where that song carries messaging that's so deeply connected to that community, and you're listening to it like it's a token that you can just like, you can collect and kind of just have, and you don't understand why you have it, then that becomes a problem. And I think that's where we get that understanding that music isn't political. And that's when people start saying, well, I can call myself punk and I can call myself goth, even though I listen to Joe Rogan and I agree with Joe Rogan because I just like the music. And it's not just about the music. And I think we've gotten to a point in society where, again, we've gone a couple steps too far one way or the other. And, you know, there's the importance of accessibility, but there's also the fear of overconsumption and a lack of context. That being said, we are going to get into our next few songs that kind of don't really have anything to do with that discussion. And it's still not reading my CD, so I'm going to try the other one and hope that one of the other CD players will work for me. Everybody, pray for me. Okay. Tiny, tiny little problem. We're going to change things up. We have alternatives. So we're going to kick things off with Soft Cult, which actually does have something to do with that. This is their EP Heaven, and I'm going to play the track. I'm playing around with things, and I'm hoping I don't break things. I'm going to be playing the track of the same name. Now, Soft Cult is a group that is originating from Kitchener-Waterloo. They are Canadian. It's two siblings, and they write a lot about different political-related topics. A lot of it has to do with, you know, bodily autonomy of women. They are putting out an album in January. I don't remember the exact date, but they are a great group and they're playing an album release at the end of January in Toronto. I've seen them live. That's where I got this physical CD. Another reason why analog media is great, because you're directly supporting the artist. But I strongly recommend, if you haven't heard of them, check them out, especially if you like this track, if you agree with some of the perspectives I've presented today. So without further ado, we are going to kick it off with Soft Cult and Heaven right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
If I die from heaven, then you die.
gonna pack up my guitar and move it on down.
Thank you.
And welcome back. That was Beethoven with Chariot. Before that, we had Soft Cult with Heaven right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Before I move into the last couple points that I have for you and get right back up on my soapbox, I would just like to say that I had the lovely pleasure of seeing Beethoven twice. They're based out of Hudson, New York. It's a duo, and they're quite lovely. I saw them for the first time opening for, I always mix this up in my head. There's Soft Cult and there's Slow Pulp. I saw them open for Slow Pulp a couple years ago with my good friend Erin, and she told me she's listening in, so shout out Erin. She helped pick that track because I was panicking about my decision last minute. But I saw them for the first time opening for Slow Pulp, and then they came back and played the Baby G, and Erin and I went to go see them again because they were so, so lovely. And I purchased this album from them. I got them to sign it. I got the set list. I was going to pull them in for an interview, but a bunch of things came up and it didn't work out. But they are very lovely people. And the point that I'm trying to make by saying that is the best way that you can support artists is buying their music, whether it's a digital file that's more convenient for you, whether they have CDs, cassettes, vinyl. I don't know what other formats of music are possible or what they would sell, but even merch, even I think some artists have it on their website where you can send them a tip, pay in cash. If you're seeing them live, also go to their concerts, buy tickets. It's a huge, huge help. After speaking to so many independent and emerging and smaller artists, that really does make a difference. And also, you know, having people come out to a show that they're playing in a city that they're not familiar with and having that room be full, even half full, is just so, so encouraging. And I don't know, like I'm getting emotional at the fact that this is happening because I just saw one of my most favorite artists of all time, Afternoon Bike Ride, who I played earlier, and they were talking about the last time they played Toronto, which is a show, unfortunately, I couldn't go to because I had exams and it just didn't work out timing-wise, but how they only had a handful of people in the room and, you know, they still played their show to the very best of their abilities, but, you know, they came back to Toronto when I saw them and it was a full room. Sorry, I can't talk today. So just a quick reminder that if you want to support music, if you want to support the artistry behind making music and the artists behind music, the best way you can do that is by supporting them directly. If you don't have the money, sharing it with people, getting the word out. Streaming doesn't really pay artists, and that kind of transitions into my next point, talking about, I have it here, algorithms, AI, Muzak, and compensation for artists. Now, AI seems to be the hot topic nowadays, and I have my thoughts, and everybody who knows me knows those thoughts, and I'm not going to get into quite all of them today. I will say, though, that AI, as it stands right now, is kind of edging in to replace art. And, you know, when the Industrial Revolution happened and in history, when we create technology and we create revolutions, it's typically to make our lives easier so that we can enjoy the things we love about life, whether that's creating art, whether that's consuming art, whether that's whatever it may be. And I kind of spiraled about this on Monday, and that's a whole other topic. But using AI to replace art, using it to replace, you know, whether it's visual artists, whether it's musicians, whether it's whatever the craft may be, is so morally corrupt and unethical, and also just an absolute spit in the face of everybody who's ever created anything ever. And, you know, a lot of people talk about the point of accessibility. This is not the time to speak about that because there are certain times when AI can be used as a tool, and there are certain times where you are just using it to replace somebody else's work because you don't want to compensate them for that. And I think we've seen that come up a lot with streaming, especially. It's been revealed time and time again that Spotify and probably other streaming giants, let's be honest, is, you know, feeding AI music that they're basically like subsidizing the cost of. So the people that are producing the music, they have partnerships with these firms. They accept a lesser, I guess, fee or payout from that. And it gets put on these playlists and it gets increased pay because people are just putting it on in the background. And there's this thing that came out in and around the advent of malls called Muzak, which is basically music to put on in the background. A lot of the times it's something very mellow, something that you don't really have to pay attention to, something that doesn't spark a lot of interest. And we're seeing the reemergence of that, but in our homes, in our day-to-day life, we're choosing to listen to that over actual artists that have created actual art for us to listen to and enjoy and connect with. And you're missing out on that whole human experience. And that combined with the fact that we are seeing, you know, major record labels, Warner, Universal, Sony, investing in AI for creation, whether it's AI artists. We're seeing, I think, Timbaland is an example of creating actual entire artists that are just AI, which, again, unethical for a multitude of reasons, but also we know for a fact that AI and generative AI is taking the work of somebody else and kind of reappropriating that and repackaging it and then releasing it. And not only is it not human and very lacking connection, which is, you know, part of the whole point of music is to create a connection or to create a community around it. But it's also taking airtime and it's taking, you know, respect and value away from the work of real artists and real musicians. And I think that's a real problem point, and it's a real point of contention. Anyhow, that's my soapbox. I'll leave you with one last quote from Daniel Ek, the former CEO of Spotify. Apple Music, Amazon, these aren't our competitors. Our only competitor is silence. If you want a really good informative book talking about AI and streaming services and, you know, the commoditization of music into basically just like a background to our lives and not as a focal point, not as a point of artistry, I strongly recommend Mood Music by Liz Pelly. It's a very recent, I think it came out early 2025. I read it over the summer a couple times because it was just genuinely so informative. And if you care about that side of the industry at all, it's a good thing to be informed in. And she has all of the facts and all of the insights, and she's compiled that, and she has interviews, and she has all of these things that you don't really think about when you go to listen to music on a streaming service. So I leave you with that. I digress for today. I'm going to play my last few songs for you because I really want to make sure that I can play through those for you. So we're going to start things off with a group that I actually also just saw live at the grad club. This is Slash Need. They're a Toronto-based, I guess, EBM industrial goth adjacent group. They combine performance art with their music. So I strongly recommend if you ever get the chance to see them live, I promise you it is a completely different experience than just listening to the album on its own. But for right now, that shall suffice. We are going to play Worm by them, which I've also played on Aaron's show, Whiplash. So shout out Aaron again. She's coming up a lot. What can I say? And then finally, we are going to finish it off today with Mother Tongues with A Heart Beating. This is off of, let me see, hold on. This is off of their album, Love in a Vicious Way. I saw them in 2023 when I was working with KPP Concerts. They were playing at the Broom Factory, and I listened to them before that, but this was the only time I've seen them live, and it was from the merch booth in like helping with all of the odds and ends of the event. But if you have the chance to see them live, I also strongly recommend checking out their entire album, their discography. They also incorporate a lot of performance art into their shows. And talking about the album art, going back to that super quickly, their album art is incredible. They also have an incredible inner sleeve, and they do a special pressing of the vinyl. It's all very impressive, and guess what? They pay actual artists to do it. So I'll leave you on that note. I hope you have a great rest of your day and a great new year, and I'll see you next week. Probably not for analog music, because this was really stressful, to be honest. But I hope you like/need with Worm right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. This has been The Mood with May, and I hope this plays, to be honest.
If I am alone, then watch me swirl. If I am alone.